Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XXXVIII, Domitian Must Die. When we last left Domitian, well, you must admit, Rome gave him a pretty decent chance to get his act together. He's been emperor for a long time, but finally, it's got to the point where enough is enough. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
While Domitian was away on campaign in the late 80s CE, a conspiracy is mounted against him, and this could have ended his reign at that point. And the leader of it is a man called Saturninus, and he actually conspires with some of the Germanic peoples who Domitian is away in this area to take part in this conspiracy. Domitian actually gets lucky here because these tribes are meant to cross the River Rhine during the winter while it's frozen over. But Suetonius tells us that the Rhine thawed and they couldn't get over, so they couldn't be part of the conspiracy, and it's found out, and in 89, Saturninus is executed.
So Domitian's troops clean this up while he's away, and he comes back to this situation then. How does he react? Because in the past, some emperors are quite merciful, some just banish people. What does Domitian do?
Well, Domitian executes everybody he can find.
Of course he does.
Connected with this.
Yeah.
But perhaps even more significantly for what happens over the next 7 years is he seems to become incredibly paranoid from this point on. So through the 90s CE, there is kind of a reign of terror, which leads to some of those executions for relatively petty crimes, but also means that Domitian acts in really quite strange ways. You might think the killing of flies was strange enough, but it starts to get even weirder.
So Domitian has kind of always seemed to have thought that everyone is against him, but I guess actually confronting a rebellion and having this happen is a validation of everything that you suspected at this point, isn't it? So you would have become really paranoid, more so than usual.
Yes, and it sort of fits with what Suetonius tells us about his character, because remember, he was meant to be conspiring against Titus all the time that Titus was emperor. So he, of course, he would assume that everyone's doing the same to him. And amongst the money that he spends on building the glorious new palace that dominates the Palatine Hill, we have some information about its interior that is in both Suetonius and Dio. It's got lots of kind of secret rooms, but also the walls in the public areas are built from a particular stone that's called phengite, and it's reflective, so that Domitian can walk around his palace and he can always look at the wall and see who's coming up behind him in case there's an assassin.
Right.
So his entire house is constructed to suit his paranoia as something that means he can constantly be watchful. And he is always watching and always waiting for and expecting the assassin to come. He also apparently, and this is in the same part of Dio, had the freedman Epaphroditus put to death because he was the freedman who helped Nero to kill himself, which you may remember from way back when we covered Nero.
That seems so far ago, but you know.
Well, if you think about Nero dies in 68
and
Domitian comes to power in 81, that's 13 years later.
Yeah.
It's just we've had a lot of emperors since then.
We have. So he has that man put to death because he's held a knife that's ended the life of an emperor.
Yes.
That's really paranoid.
But, you know, Nero was trying to kill himself and couldn't do it.
Mm.
Just couldn't muster up enough strength in his arms to do it because it's a terrifying thing to do. So he actually demands that this freedman help him, but that is then held against this poor man all that time later.
So by the sounds of how he's treated this freedman who ended the life of Nero and how he's just being blasé with killing senators and anyone who speaks against him or anyone who's got some killer joke material, that he's got a complete disregard for anyone's life other than his own, of course, that all of Rome is just a plaything for him because he's the emperor
Yes, and he sort of takes that to extremes, according to our sources, in that he seems to enjoy torturing people and enjoys watching it as well. So we're told in Suetonius that the people who've been taken prisoner are tortured in a horrible way, where their genitals are scorched, and that this is something like Domitian likes to watch. And this is something that comes up again and again, the fact that Domitian is always watching, and he likes watching other people's suffering. So he's looking out for things to find wrong with you that he can punish you for, and then he wants to watch as you suffer. There's a great quote in Tacitus in the Agricola where he again compares him to Nero. So we've had a lot of this comparison with previous emperors, especially Nero. And he actually says Domitian is worse than Nero, which takes some doing in our sources. And the way that he phrases that is, even Nero used to look away when people were being killed and tortured. Even Nero used to avert his eyes, although he ordered abominations, says Tacitus. He didn't want to witness them. He's writing this in retrospect, of course. He's not writing this under Domitian. This is written in 98 CE, 2 years after Domitian's died. The worst of our torments under Domitian was to see him with his eyes fixed upon us. So it's the watching him watching us. Every sigh was registered against us, and when we all turned pale, he did not scruple to make us marked men by a glance of his savage countenance. And Tacitus finishes it off with the killer line that you could never tell whether Domitian was blushing, because he always looked really red anyway, that blood-red countenance, he says, which saved him from ever being seen to blush with shame.
Beyond cruelty, that's what the implication, that he's getting a real enjoyment out of this. And I hesitate to use the word evil, but I'm not sure what's a notch up from cruelty that you could kind of attribute this to.
It does sound very much like our definition of the word evil. We get that fairly consistently from the sources. And I'd say again, they're all really hostile sources from people who would have suffered under Domitian and wouldn't have been given the kind of respect they wanted. But we do get some real kind of horror stories that we've already mentioned about the way he behaves. And it's not just physical torture. There's also clearly mental torture going on. And that's part of what Tacitus talks about, that you know you're being watched. You're being watched if you're being hurt, but you're also being watched in case you look the wrong way, in case you say the wrong word. And we have a story which only appears in Dio Cassius, but it's, I think, my favorite story about Domitian, which is that he used to torture people mentally by inviting them to dinner, which sounds like a nice thing to do. But they're what are known as these black dinners. So in other words, you'd invite, you know, senators, whoever, around to dinner, and they'd enter a room which would be entirely black. So the walls are black, the furniture is black, and there's just very small light so that they can see what is there. And the attendants who serve them are dressed in black. Everything in the room is black. The food even has been coloured in a way to make it black. Perhaps burnt, I don't know. So they assume this is a dinner where Domitian is just torturing us before he kills us. Mm. But he actually just wants to see them suffer and be scared, because at the end of the evening, he gives them a gift, gives them a slave to see them home, and they get home safe. So it's all about showing exactly who's in control. Because, of course, during that dinner, you have to play along with it and eat the dinner, even though you're absolutely terrified and you know that what's going to happen next is you're going to die. And that's the kind of thing that he enjoys. It really seems like sadism.
Sidebar, squid ink makes food black. There's a story in Suetonius. Well, there's a couple of stories in Suetonius that come up where he invites people over for dinner. He lulls them into a false sense of security. And the person is completely oblivious that their death sentence has been signed and that they are going to die in the morning. And he also says that Domitian has worked out a speech which he delivers, kind of saying that what's going to happen to you is justice.
And that's kind of the inverse, isn't it? Instead of making people think they're going to die and then they live, you make them think that he's friendly towards you and then you kill them the next
yes,
day.
Yes, yes. It reminds me of a scene in there's a character in Pulp Fiction played by Samuel L. Jackson named Jules, and he's got this quote from the Bible, Ezekiel, about the righteous man should have his vengeance.
No, it's on the soundtrack. I know it well.
Yeah. But it's almost that thing, you know, he's got a speech worked out to say, I'm going to kill you because it's the righteous thing to do and I'm right because I'm the emperor. And you know, if you've got a little speech worked out before somebody dies, that you've been doing this a lot, that if you've got a little preamble worked out.
Basically him being judge, jury and executioner and having that as a formula. So he's doing it so much that he has this formulaic speech.
It also kind of implies, though, that being emperor, you are divine, that you have a divine power over whether people live and die. It's almost admirable that he's still trying to justify doing this kind of thing when he doesn't actually need to, does he?
Well, Domitian takes that role to its logical extent, that he can do what he wants. But for the Romans, it's really important to separate out the living emperor from the gods. So you only get deified after your death. And that is what has happened with, it's happened with Julius Caesar, it's happened with Augustus, it's happened with Claudius, Vespasian and Titus, all right, the good emperors, so-called. They will not accept divine honours during their life, certainly not in Italy. There's strange things go on in the East that they allow to happen because it makes those people happy. But they don't have a cult until after their death, until their soul can be carried up and they can be deified, and that's fine. But there's a story in several sources that Domitian demanded to be called Dominus et Deus, which means Lord and God. Now, the word Dominus is bad enough because it's the term that a slave will use towards their master. It literally means master.
And Augustus refused that, so...
Absolutely, yeah. Because of that association, because it's like saying the Roman people are my slave. So, and you know, as we've said so many times, Augustus knew exactly how to play that PR game. Domitian seems to have gone to the other side of that and to say, I don't need that PR game. This is the reality. Call me Dominus et Deus. Now, this appears a lot in Martial when he's being critical of Domitian. It appears in Suetonius. It appears in Dio. But it doesn't appear anywhere official. And this makes historians a little bit suspicious about this story of whether he actually used that title. It wasn't an official title. It doesn't appear on coins. It doesn't appear on inscriptions.
Whereas if it was any title that they have, they try and put to use in those kind of things, don't they?
Exactly. So on coins, it will, you know, there's the long list of titles. There's Imperator. PM means Pontifex Maximus. Mm. That would be amongst the list of titles if it were official. Now, whether Domitian did demand this face to face, but even he knew it was a step too far to make it official and make it concrete, quite literally, I have to say it wouldn't be in character with him to actually stop, to not go overboard. So, or whether it's a rumor that starts, and these sources are very happy to take that up because they regard Domitian quite rightly as a tyrant, and this is a good marker of a tyrant. So it's a good story to tell about a bad emperor. He also does something that previous rulers have done, but it can seem quite autocratic and out of control. He changes the names of two of the months to reflect his own name. So September and October, he changes to Germanicus, which celebrates his victory over the Germani, which, as we know, is in question whether it was really a triumph.
Yeah.
And October is changed to Domitianus, which is obviously his name. Now, we have precedent for this with July after Julius Caesar, August after Augustus. But I guess changing two and doing it when you're a very unpopular figure. And while July and August remain July and August, we don't call September and October Germanicus and Domitianus, do we? Which is proof that they were changed back. It did not last. And it's read much more as an abuse of power, as an attempt to kind of put his stamp onto the calendar, to something that people use all the time. And another marker that he's raising himself way above the people is one that's quite literal, it's quite material, in that in the enormous house that he has built, he has, and this is quite unusual, a private quarters and public quarters. For the Romans, their homes were pretty much thrown open. And in the public quarters, he has what it amounts to a throne room. It's a place where he will receive people, but he's on a raised platform. So he is physically raised above the people or the ambassadors or the senators who come to see him. Part of this non-pretense that he's on their level. He's not on their level. He's literally raised above there. So it's the beginning of a real monarchy. The emperor is better than you. The emperor is closer to the gods. And to reflect that, he's higher up in the room.
It's amazing how much of a change that is, I guess, across the spectrum of all the emperors so far, that they used to be just sitting in there amongst the senators, just mucking it in. everybody was on the same level there, even if it was just a complete pretense.
Well, we should never forget that while we call them emperors, they are certainly during the Julio-Claudian period and continues to be one of their titles is princeps, which means first man. But that means first among equals. It means first man in the Senate. So it doesn't mean that you are elevated above it. It should mean that you're the oldest man in the Senate, the longest serving member. And it's a title that comes to be equated with emperor, but it has its precedent, it has its roots way back in the Republic. So there's still a pretense that we're still doing the Republic. We're still mucking along with that.
So he's incredibly paranoid about conspiracies. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And we know the Romans aren't embarrassed to get rid of a bad emperor if they're pushed. Look, to be honest, I'm surprised Domitian lasts this long.
So, yes, it's 15 years. Yeah. 15 years of reign, and he's emperor longer than the other Flavians.
Yeah, yeah. So how does he stop becoming emperor? Where does it all fall apart for him?
Well, he's assassinated in 96 CE, so your wish has come true.
Can I say had it coming?
According to the biography and other histories too, he does see it coming.
Yeah.
In the Romans were also obsessed with having their astrological charts made.
And the Romans love a good prophecy.
Yeah, and there are prophecies around everywhere. And this makes him more paranoid, of course, so all of these prophecies that he's going to be killed on a certain day at a certain time and there's nothing he can do to prevent it and things are going to get better soon. That's one of the prophecies, which he seems to misread, actually, to think that he's going to be saved from this idea that he might be killed. But actually, it means things are going to get better for Rome.
Mm.
Because prophecies are never simple, are they? They always mean something slightly different to what you think. There are sort of literal prophecies in terms of the weather seems to turn against him. So there's lots of lightning strikes that have effects, like striking the Temple of Jupiter on the Capitoline Hill, which, remember, is where he hid out in the civil wars.
And he rebuilt it after the fire. Yeah.
And also the temple of the Flavians, the temple dedicated to Vespasian and Titus, is struck by lightning. And his own palace, his own bedroom, and inscriptions with his name on them. All of these are struck by lightning and scorched or burnt off. All of these are taken as markers that his time is getting close. He's also supposed to have dreamed that the goddess Minerva, who he's taken as his patron, comes to him and says, "I can't protect you anymore." Which actually makes him sound like an epic hero. It often happens in epic poetry that the hero who's going to die at the end in the duel, the god who's been looking after them, kind of has to go, bye, Jupiter's called me back. So this kind of elevates him but makes him look slightly tragic.
Does it enhance his paranoia at all? You'd think that he'd really take steps to make sure that none of this happens or...
It does, and he either sends away or executes astrologers.
Yeah.
You don't want them mapping out how long your life might... They might give people ideas how short your life could be.
So you kill the messenger.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's not solving the problem. That's like breaking a pen.
Yes.
To stop somebody writing something against you, you know? So with all these prophecies foretelling your doom, this seems to have been the world's worst kept secret around Rome then, that they knew that this death was going to come.
Yes, it's much anticipated, and the assassination does not seem to be a well kept secret. It's a plan of various people. We don't know exactly who was involved at higher levels because it's carried out by freedmen, people of fairly low level, but it's thought that Domitian's wife, Domitia, knew about it at the very least and may have been involved.
Right.
And of course, the elites have the most to gain by getting rid of Domitian because they're the ones who every day are fearing for their life in particular.
How does it happen then?
Domitian is tricked by a man called Stephanus, who's a freedman. And he pretends that he's been injured. He's got bandages around his arm, but he's actually concealing a knife in there. He's got a dagger. And then, and this I think is a great move, he pretends that he's coming towards Domitian to tell him about a conspiracy. Oh, Emperor, oh, Lord and God.
Yes.
I have evidence here of a conspiracy. Take a look. So he gets to come towards him. But instead of handing him the proof of a conspiracy, he takes the dagger out and stabs him.
So where does this attack happen?
Well, it happens in Domitian's bedroom and it happens in his groin. He's stabbed in the upper thigh. He's receiving Stephanus in his bedroom.
The steward with the knife in the bedroom, worst game of Cluedo ever. So Domitian is stabbed in the groin and I guess tries to defend himself.
Yeah, he has, again, a sign of his paranoia. He apparently has a dagger under his pillow. So he goes to pull it out, but there's only the hilt of it there. So there's planning been going on. They've taken it away. They've broken it.
Yeah.
And left him with a useless weapon. And then another of his freedmen, Clodianus, stabs him. And everybody starts to join in, actually, of the freedmen. All of these people who are servants of his bedchamber, of his immediate entourage,
suddenly burst in and get in on the action.
Yeah, and including a gladiator from the Imperial Gladiators School. Suetonius says we know this much, or he knows this much, because he's actually got a witness from it. A boy who was attending to the household gods in the bedroom of Domitian witnessed it all and presumably told Suetonius or told somebody who then related it to Suetonius later.
Well, the fact that everybody piled in on it, that there was so much planning beforehand, that the prophecies happened, that there was a witness who was allowed to stay alive, it seems like a really blasé kind of attitude towards killing the emperor. So I guess that kind of shows that A, he had it coming, and B, he was just really hated and nobody would miss him, and that this isn't a terrible thing to do at all. This is cleaning up.
He does seem to have been deeply unpopular, and it seems like everybody in his immediate vicinity is quite happy to join in on this. And it sort of ends up being almost like a farce, the whole thing, so that, you know, we've got sort of random people coming and stabbing him. And I'll just read you the last sentence from Suetonius in this chapter. Meanwhile, the emperor grappled with Stephanus and bore him to the ground, where they struggled for a long time, Domitian trying now to wrest the dagger from his assailant's hands. This is after he's been stabbed several times, by the way. So imagine blood everywhere and he's still trying to grapple with the original assassin. So he's trying to get the dagger away and now to gouge out his eyes with his lacerated fingers. So he's really desperately fighting against these assailants. And in the end, we imagine he just dies from loss of blood.
Yeah.
He's got about four people trying to stab him. And he does fight it out at the end, apparently. So he dies on September the 18th, 96 CE.
It feels like at this point there's going to be a celebration. So how does Rome react to the death of Domitian?
Initially, it's fairly low key because there's no celebration of him having been emperor. His body is cremated, it's given burial, but it's done in a very ordinary way. So he's carried out on a very ordinary bier, and there's really only his nurse to take care of it. So in other words, somebody very lowly, nobody from the imperial entourage interested in it. And he's not meant to be in the temple. He's not meant to be honoured, but secretly his ashes are taken to the Temple of the Flavians. So none of this is official. The Senate is not interested in celebrating him.
Yeah.
It's all kind of swept under the carpet.
But literally swept under the carpet because he's just mixed in with Julia's remains.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with
really,
his niece, Julia.
I feel even worse for Julia now. But
yeah, she doesn't even get away from him after she's died.
No.
Their ashes are mixed together.
So
kind of horrible.
The Senate's happy that he's gone?
Immensely happy.
The people of Rome are a bit, okay.
Yeah, apparently the army is sad. Only the army really has any, you know.
They got a pay rise.
Yeah, that makes it sound very bad, doesn't it? Only the army has any kind of sorrow at his passing. The Senate is happy, and the Senate reacts by doing something they have never done before. And we've had emperors who have been forced to kill themselves. We've had emperors who've been assassinated. We've had emperors who've been killed in civil war and then basically almost executed. But the Senate decides they're going to wipe out Domitian and wipe out any record of him. There are statues of Domitian, but not as many as there are with other emperors who've reigned for 15 years, because he suffered what is called damnatio memoriae, which means a loss of memory. It means that in the way that some authoritarian regimes often react, you rewrite history as if that person had never been there. So inscriptions have his name erased, statues torn down or recarved. The Romans are often quite practical in this. The next emperor is going to be Nerva, not related to the Flavians at all. And there are statues and relief sculptures with Nerva's very thin face carved on them. But you can see traces of a fatter face that was Domitian's. So they've thought, we've got this statue of the emperor sacrificing, something like that. Let's just turn it into the new emperor. We can't keep it with Domitian on there because he's suffered damnatio memoriae. So it's basically like crossing him out, getting rid of him completely and carrying on with life, pretending it never happened. So obviously he's not going to be deified. There are no honours paid to him. Nobody's celebrating his birthday, except perhaps his poor nurse, who does seem to continue to commemorate him. And he's struck from the record.
So Rome reacts with relief.
Yes, the Senate in particular, the public, don't seem to have any particular love for Domitian. You know, even Nero was loved in the East. Greece had a lot of affection for Nero. There doesn't seem to be any of that with Domitian. He's the last of a fairly short-lived dynasty. So it's amazing that the Flavians sort of come from nowhere, as we've discussed. They're not from a very elite family. They're not from a senatorial family. They seem to be a very successful dynasty with the first two emperors. But Domitian manages to wipe all of that out. And you can see that the kind of honours paid to the first two, the deifications, as opposed to what happens to Domitian, means he's really failed at keeping everybody happy.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes. Please leave a review there and tell your friends about it. A couple of other podcasts that I run that you might like is When in Rome, currently looking at the long history of the Colosseum, and Biography, where we're now learning about the life of Charles Darwin. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon Evans on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.